Dear Caravaggio, I don't know if you can get BT Sport where you are. If not, I'm sure there's a workaround you can do for live streaming, and the highlights will doubtless be on YouTube by now. But I happen to be writing to you in the early hours of a Sunday morning, having stayed up late to watch on TV a cage fighter, mixed martial artist Conor McGregor, make his long-awaited return to the UFC octagon against the Russian Khabib Nurmagomedov in what can only be described not so much as a fight as an orgy of violence in Las Vegas. The Irishman McGregor, who looks very much like one of the onlookers in your painting of the beheading of St. John, actually, had returned to the ring after nearly 2 years away and was far outclassed by the Russian, who managed to manoeuvre him into a chokehold and forced him to submit midway through the fourth round. This sparked chaotic scenes in the arena as Nurmagomedov leapt out of the cage to attack McGregor's team, while McGregor himself was attacked inside the cage by members of Nurmagomedov's crew. Truly appalling scenes. You'd have absolutely loved it. Because you are, of course, Mr. C., one of the great practitioners of the art of violence, your life as famously turbulent as your paintings are dark and disturbing. I should say, allow me to introduce myself, am a soft, round, middle-aged man who wouldn't say boo to a proverbial goose, but even so, like a lot of men, I suspect, I have occasionally found myself in trouble or in proximity to trouble, and have had to get out of it fast, and so I must admit to being rather fascinated, impressed even, by people who know how to handle themselves. Bruce Lee, Muhammad Ali, Matt Damon in the Jason Bourne films, and you. So I thought I might ask, you're the sort of man who might know, what is wrong with us? Yours sincerely, Ian Sansom. Dear Caravaggio, no offence intended, sir. You are absolutely right. It was an impertinence to get in touch at all and to address you so familiarly. And I am not for one moment casting doubt upon your character, your honour, your mother's honour, your father's or your family name, which was not, of course, Caravaggio, which is the name of the town in Lombardy from whence you came or nearby, but Merisi, Michelangelo Merisi was your given name. I come to you, therefore, in all humility, Maestro Merisi, because I know what happens to people when they don't. My favourite story about you, actually, is the story of the artichokes. You know the one. You went to a restaurant with some companions, so the story goes, and were presented with a dish of artichokes, some of which had been cooked in butter and some in oil. And you asked the waiter which was which, and he told you, not unreasonably, to just use your nose. At which, without saying anything, according to the waiter's later testimony to the authorities, you took an earthenware plate and threw it at him, forced him to the ground while you stood up, drew the sword of one of your companions, and threatened him not to complain or to bring proceedings. You don't get Gilbert and George doing that in their local kebab shop in Spitalfields, do you? Can I ask, though? Is it true? Yours, with the greatest respect, Ian Sansom. Dear Caravaggio, I thought as much. Now, I promise I won't ask anything else about your personal life. The rumours about your intimate relationship with your servant, Francesco Boneri, the effect on you of your father dying of the plague when you were 6 years old, the exact nature of your relationship with your female model, the prostitute Filide Melodroni, details of all the court and legal proceedings against you, the accounts of your arguments with the police, your possession of various weapons, incitement to unrest, violence against property and persons, your various spells in prison, or indeed about exactly what happened on the evening of the 28th of May 1606, when you killed a man, either in a duel or in an argument over a tennis match, and which led to you being sentenced to death by beheading, which prompted your escape to Rome, and then to Naples, and then to Malta, where you were once again imprisoned before escaping and dying, utterly alone and with nothing, age just 39. No, I come to you, sir, in all good faith, with my dish of oiled and buttered artichokes, as it were, to inquire not about your life, but about your art. I've just been corresponding with Albrecht Dürer, actually. I know you're a bit of a fan. I think you stole the idea of your painting of Christ's betrayal from Dürer. When I say stole, I mean borrowed, obviously. I wouldn't for a moment, maestro, accuse you of... Anyway, he was a great one for the self-portrait, Dürer, as you know. But with you, I'm intrigued. There is nothing, no conventional self-portrait at all. Though you do pop up quite often in your paintings, in the most bizarre fashion. The painting, usually known these days as Sick Bacchus, for example, which was painted when you were 22, I think, shortly after you'd first settled in Rome and had suffered from a bout of malaria, this Sick Bacchus is generally considered to be a self-portrait, and you do look pretty sick in it, may I say, in every sense. You're also one of the men witnessing the murder in your Martyrdom of St. Matthew, I believe, and you're a witness again, if the scholars are right, and it is you, to a terrible act of violence in your painting of the Martyrdom of St. Ursula, which is basically a depiction of a young woman having been shot in the stomach at point-blank range with a bow and arrow. You're kind of looking over Ursula's shoulder. It's pretty nasty. And, of course, there's your David with the head of Goliath, in which you are Goliath, head severed, and looking for all the world like a Renaissance Charles Manson. Some biographers and art historians think it's also you in your famous painting of the head of Medusa, another of your many bodiless heads, this one uttering a soundless scream, eyes bulging, snake hair coiling, and blood spurting from the neck. You clearly had a bit of a thing for severed heads. You only ever signed one painting, The Beheading of St. John the Baptist, in which your name is written in the blood running from the neck of St. John. What's that all about? Yours very, very respectfully, Ian Sansom. Dear Caravaggio, I haven't heard back from you, alas. You could be anywhere, I suppose. You might have escaped. Or a bit like in your paintings, you're both there and not there, hiding in plain sight, as it were, a shadow or a ghost, a presence. I wrote to George Eliot last year, the novelist. I'm not sure the two of you would have got on, to be honest. But she remarks in her novel Middlemarch, again, not sure it'd be your thing, that souls live on in perpetual echoes. Your work echoes and reverberates even to this day, in the large format photographic tableau of Gregory Crewdson, say, or indeed in the films of David Lynch. They're very Caravaggio. It's partly to do with your various technical innovations, your deployment of direct lighting, and your extraordinary use of black, that boldly dark and black colouring, in the words of Giovanni Pietro Bellori, an early biographer, a colouring that both disguises and reveals. David Hockney has claimed that you basically invented Hollywood lighting. It had been done before, you can see it in Tintoretto, but no one had done it with the same audacity, the spotlights and the flares. After a certain point, around 1604, all of your paintings look as if the action were taking place in a dungeon, lit only by shafts of light. You spent more time in prison than any other artist I know, so I suppose it must have had an effect. But it's not just the darkness and the lighting that seems familiar and strange and contemporary. It's the weird artificiality in your work. Picasso, I think you two would have got on, is supposed to have said when he was working on Guernica, his frieze depicting the horrors of the Spanish Civil War, that he wanted the horse in his painting to have the same presence as the horse in your painting of the conversion of St. Paul. I want it to be so realistic, he said, just like in Caravaggio, that you can smell the sweat. I've seen your painting of the conversion of St. Paul, and far be it for me to disagree with Picasso, but I don't think it's realistic at all. Indeed, anything but. It's more like a dream horse, a horse hallucinated, which I think perhaps gets closer to the truth and the appeal of your work. There was a great art critic, Adrian Stokes, who claimed that to paint a picture is metaphorically to take things to pieces in the outside world and to put them together again. Making pictures, in his words, is a reenactment of an early state, a restaging of our infant impulse to put together something which in fantasy or in imagination we have destroyed or torn to shreds. This is the theory of art as a form of reparation, and I do think there's something in it. Certainly that idea of tearing apart and putting back together that explains something both deeply disturbing and enormously pleasing about your work. David Hockney, who's very good on you actually, seems to get you, in his book A History of Pictures, written with Martin Gayford. They're brilliant on the technical side of things. He argues that your paintings are a kind of collage of different projections, which seems to me exactly right. Your paintings are almost like someone has photoshopped stuff together. It's almost as if they have been assembled in a dark room with just a single light and nothing but the imagination as a guide. And in the end, this is how all art gets done, isn't it? Yours, also in the dark, Ian Sansom. Dear Caravaggio, thank you so much for writing. I feared I may have offended you, and I really didn't want to lose touch. Of all the writers and artists I've written to over the years, in a funny way, you're the person with whom I feel I have the most in common. Maybe it's because you don't really fit, or you're easy to patronise, or to pity, or to pigeonhole. You were always stuck in an awkward position, as in your paintings. For much of your life, you benefited from a wealthy patron, the Cardinal Francesco del Monte, whose influence was what enabled you to be able to work, and you moved in privileged circles. Yet at the same time, you were a true provincial, an outsider, and a bit of a thug. It's perplexing. It is perfectly understandable. There is a great book by someone called Maggie Nelson. You'd like it. I'll send you a copy. Even if you don't have BT Sport, surely you're allowed postal deliveries there. The book is called The Art of Cruelty, in which she reflects on the ways in which the fine arts aestheticise violence. She understands, I think, the violence and the violent impulses, the excesses that underlie so much art and so many lives, our endless reserves of cruelty. I think you might understand exactly what she's talking about, and therefore why a man like me might be sitting up late at night watching UFC, fantasising, thinking about art, and writing to you, sir, with the greatest respect. Yours, Ian Sansom.